How you doing? Danny DeHicks, my name. And if you're wondering what this podcast is about, brace yourself. I used to be a Jehovah's Witness. And if you don't know what a Jehovah's Witness is, they're basically those people that come around and knock on your door on a Saturday morning. And I was a Jehovah's Witness. I was sort of brought up in it from the age of 5, and I finally got kicked out of it at the age of 23. And everyone says in business that you need to have a point of difference. So my point of difference as a Jehovah's Witness is I was kicked out probably at the age of 22, and I managed to get back into the organization within 4 months, and then 6 months later I got kicked out again. I just wanted to sort of say about the impact of growing up as a Jehovah's Witness. Most people think that because you are a Jehovah's Witness, that means you don't do blood transfusions, and also you don't celebrate Christmas, and you don't celebrate your birthdays. Well, I don't give a shit about Christmas, and I don't give a shit about my birthday. And the blood transfusion thing, well, funny enough, scientifically, they reckon that if you do have a blood transfusion and you're on your deathbed, that your body rejects blood for the first 48 hours, and it can slow the process of healing up. So there you go, something you may not know. So probably not sure about if I do a blood transfusion. The idea of having somebody else's blood in my body doesn't really appeal to me. Organ transplant, not sure, that's a conscience matter. But so the blood side of it, personally, I probably may stay. If I had a choice, the very last thing I'd do was probably take blood. But there's lots of alternatives out there for blood. Anyway, like oxygenating your blood, putting it back into your own body, all that sort of stuff. But that's not why I was a Jehovah's Witness, because I was not a Jehovah's Witness because I wanted a way to get out of celebrating birthdays or my birth or Christmas, nor did I really have a strong belief about the blood at the time. However, when you are part of a organization and they bring out the God's Word, the Bible, and you spend every Tuesday or Thursday night studying parts of the Bible so you get a better understanding of it, and somebody stands up and says there's a part in the Bible that says you must abstain from blood or you must not worship false gods, why they don't celebrate birthdays and Christmas is because of the doctrinal origins of those two festival days. So doesn't mean that Jehovah's Witnesses don't believe in giving gifts. It doesn't mean that we can't celebrate wedding anniversaries. It's just you don't want to worship anything that had a pagan origin to it, because it would be like worshipping a false god. And apparently the god that you are meant to worship is Jehovah, or Yahweh, as they say. So what was the impacts? Well, for me, I feel two people in my life may still be here if it wasn't for the Jehovah's Witness faith. The first one was my stepfather. So my real father left at 2. He was a drunk and an alcoholic. My mum found the Jehovah's Witness faith when I was around about 3 or 4. I'm thinking, because somebody's just pulled up the drive and I'm doing a podcast at home by myself, because this is not the sort of podcast you do when people are listening. Anyway, I'll carry on. So what I'm thinking of is at the age of probably 3 or 4, my mum found the Jehovah's Witness faith. My sister, who was 2 years older than me, obviously, and I've got a half-brother who was 9 years older than me. My mum met Robert DeHicks when I was around about 5 or 6, and she knew him for about 18 months. Now, when they got married, because you can't live together or have sex unless you're married, so they got married. Robert moved in. I remember Robert was in our life for 18 months. Now, he was the life of any party. And he suffered with depression, and we did not know what depression was back then. He would go into these no-speaking weeks, and he would not speak to anyone in the household for 2 weeks. He would go to work, he was a painter and a decorator, and he would come home, and then he would stop speaking. People would turn up on the weekends, like you do, the Joneses are here, and he would be normal. He would talk to them, interact with them, and then when they left, he would stop talking. And eventually, he decided that he was always trying to please us. I felt he always felt like he felt short. of pleasing everyone. Not that my mum was demanding or their family had high expectations, but he couldn't please himself more than anything. So we'd go off to New Brighton on a Saturday morning and we'd come home with a car load of stuff that we didn't really need. My father had a life insurance at the time. I call him my father, my stepfather, that was about $10,000. When my stepfather passed away or died, committed suicide, we had $10,000 worth of hire purchases. So it tells you the type of guy he was. Looking back, probably got bipolar. When he died, the Jehovah's Witness faith, the elders of the church, didn't know how to handle it. Because if you took your own life, it was a disgrace. Because it was showing no respect for life. They didn't understand what mental illness was, and they didn't liken it as a disease. So we lived with a bit of shame, basically. And also, my mum used to wake up. I remember 7 years after Robert had died, I'd wake up hearing my mum cry. And it would be basically, I'd wake up and say, "Mum, are you crying about Robert?" And she'd say, "Yes," and I'd go back to sleep. Because as long as I knew what she was crying about, it was fine. My mum, once I remember locking herself in the bathroom and she was trying to take her own life. We rang up a family friend and they come around and talked her out of it. But at this time, no professional help was given. No one from outside the church got any professional help. Really interesting. Right, and then what spiraled my father down was the Erebus crash, the Air New Zealand crash. I remember 2 weeks after that happened, he took his life on the 3rd of December. My sister was older. She got on really well with Robert. So did I thought. And I reckon it affected her life majorly. Now, part of the Jehovah's Witness faith is that you need to have, you need to live a good, clean, wholesome life. You need to always do the right thing. You need not to have naughty thoughts. You definitely can't look at porn. You definitely don't have sexual thoughts about other people of the other sex. So all those things, every time as a young guy, you know, you weren't allowed to do things like masturbation, for example. One of my little habits. Every time that happened, I felt guilty. You know, and you couldn't talk to anyone about it. So you're always living with a shame in your life. And anything like that. So some people do it, not masturbation, but they would do things wrong and then keep it to themselves. So it's just this continuous feeling in your life that you're falling short and you're always bringing reproach against the God that you wanted to serve is really hard. So my sister, who was 2 years older, when she went through her teenage years, she was a rebel. She used to smoke. She used to run away from home. Got to the point where my nine-year-old brother and myself were nailing up her bedroom window so she couldn't sneak out the window at night time. You know, imagine what that was like for a young teenage girl. My sister eventually got into prostitution. She used to work over in Sydney, King's Cross. And she used to say to the family that she was running a catering business. She got married over in Australia. She told her husband she was going out doing catering jobs. He worked in the Navy and she was going out prostituting herself. She came back to New Zealand with a beautiful little boy called Ashley. I met him when he was 18 months old. And eventually she met another guy and had another child. And then all her drug addiction problems and her depression problems all sort of got on top of her. Until a day we found out that she'd been checked into Princess Margaret Hospital and she was trying to smother one of her children, which is horrifying to us because we didn't see it coming. So for the next 2.5 years, my sister went through Sunnyside. She had shock treatment. We had custody issues. I remember once sitting around a table with three family members and five doctors and psychiatrists trying to come up with a solution, and they really didn't have any idea what to do with her. So she was taking the meeting at a very young age and coming up with suggestions because I'm entrepreneurial, as you do. So anyway, long story short, my sister managed to get herself back into a flat. I remember moving her so many times I can't even remember the number. If I ever saw her washing machine again, I never wanted to pick it up, but I kept on having to move this stupid thing around. She's got two beautiful children now, fully grown up, are successful, have good careers, and I'm really proud of them. Well, Ashley does a little bit of marijuana, but Ashley and Sam maybe a little bit too much drinking at one point in time. She's managed to get a life back in order, and she's happily engaged to be married very soon, which we're all very excited about. But what does that mean when you're a Jehovah's Witness? Well, my sister finished up taking her own life. She did it on the same date that my stepfather took his own life, on the 3rd of December. She was on 15-minute suicide watch. She hung herself off the window ledge using her belt. Her body was stuffed, you know, and she was in a real bad way. Every year, about the same time as Robert took his own life, she would be egging herself to basically take her own life. I believe she took her own life because she felt short of being perfect, or the expectations of the Jehovah's Witness faith that I grew up with. I met a girl, I had sex with her, you know, and the next day both the girl and I went off to the elders to tell them what we did, because they felt it was premeditated. I weren't, repentant, they kicked me out of the religion. So what did that mean? Well, that actually meant that I would not be able to talk to all the people I grew up with. To put you in the picture, I'm a painter and a decorator, okay? So my stepfather was a painter and a decorator. My new stepfather was a painter and a decorator. I worked at one of my stepfather's best friends was a painter and a decorator, and he took me on as a painter and a decorator. I did his apprenticeship with him. My brother was a painter and a decorator. Everyone was a painter and a decorator. So here I am, getting kicked out of the Jehovah's Witness faith. I'm in partnership as a painter and a decorator, and I'm basically going to lose all my friends, get kicked out of the Jehovah's Witness church, and then I have to go along to the church if I want to get back into it, sit at the back of the hall and see all my friends, but they're not allowed to speak to me, and then live life outside the Jehovah's Witness faith with no friends and not pick up any bad habits and not think about women either. So as a young fella, I'm not exactly sure of my age, I didn't document it, but probably the age of 22, I'm going to a hall on Gloucester Street, sitting at the back of the hall, bawling my eyes out. Every meeting for 4 months, I went along and I sat there bawling my eyes out because of what I've done. I was the only J-Dub I know of that's been reinstated after 4 months of being disfellowshipped. 6 months down the track, I met another nice girl, didn't I? So there I go. And we got together, hooked up, and then we both felt guilty as hell about it. Went back to the elders and said I did it again, so they kicked me out again. So I got kicked out twice. That means my mum doesn't speak to me, which I'm really close to, because after my sister's mental illness, my mum and I were always on the phone to each other. What's Lynn doing? I witnessed my sister cutting her wrists. I witnessed my sister driving her car into her house. My sister would black out. She was in Rickenham Mall once, and she blacked out, went through the window screen of the car somehow, and crashed into 5 parked cars. Never heard the whole story completely because of the Privacy Act. I've seen my sister on dialysis machine. I've seen her having arguments with my mum. So my mum and I were always on the phone together, and my mum would ring and go, what's Linda doing, you know? So no surprise when at 2:30 a.m. in the morning when that somebody knocked at my door, and I used to live 5-6 stories high in a secure apartment. I opened the door and there's 2 police people there, and I said, my sister's dead. And they said, how'd you know that? And I said, because she's been trying for a long time. So anyway, sister took her own life, stepfather took her own life, and I don't feel I'm prone to suicide. And the shame, my sister wasn't in a religion, but we always feel like you felt short. And that's really hard. So now I live life. At the age of 23, I started over. I got my mum doesn't talk to me. My half-brother doesn't talk to me. And it just seems like the Jehovah's Witness faith or belief or doctrines or cult, whatever you want to call it, has caused so much disruption in my life. It doesn't seem fair that a man-made organisation can do that. So when I watched that documentary, The Watchtower, I found that absolutely amazing. And a lot of the stuff they were talking about was exactly the same. And they were talking about how all the people were, a lot of child molesting going on. I believe that happens in any organisation. But the difference between the J-Dub organisation, they document it and they keep notes. So they did this, the courts managed to get the Jehovah's Witness to hand over their notes in Australia. And since 1953, they had well over 1,000 cases where people had been molested and the organisation had covered it up, and which is amazing. And none of those cases had ever been reported to the authorities. So when I think back of all my judicial meetings, you know, I had quite a few. For example, went to a party. I opened the fridge and it's full of beer. Young fella of 16 or 17 years of age, drinks too much. Drunk so much, I threw up. And then the next thing, somebody at the party thought that they would have to complain about my drunken behaviour. So they trotted off to the elders. The elders rang me up and they go, "Oh, we need to get together and talk to you, Danny. You're drunk and disorderly." So here I am. I sit in front of the three elders. They said, "How many minutes did you drink?" And I said, "Well, I hadn't had any experience with alcohol. You can drink, but you're not meant to be intoxicated. So because of that, I lost all my privileges in the congregation. So it means I couldn't answer up. I couldn't participate at the Watchtower study or the book study. I had to sit there like an idiot, know the answers to a lot of the questions they ask you, and not participate. Which may sound really silly, but when you are a Jehovah's Witness, it's your life. And to be kicked out or restricted in your faith, and you're a high achiever, it's detrimental. No wonder people commit suicide who leave the Jehovah's Witness faith. No wonder people are depressed. I remember being in a room with 25 people, and one of the ladies said that she's on Prozac. And she said, "Did you know that out of this whole 25 people, I think it was 19 of them were taking some form of medication to help their depression?" That's ridiculous, guys. Yeah. Anyway, crazy. So I hope I'm not waffling on too long, but I just wanted to share a little bit about being a Jehovah's Witness. I own a business networking organization now, and this is my private podcast. I help people form deep, meaningful relationships. I used to believe that you couldn't have a trusting relationship with people outside the Jehovah's Witness faith. And boy, have I been wrong. So if you are a Jehovah's Witness, or you have this private part of your life that you don't share about your faith, then by all means, contact me and let's talk. Let me introduce you to life outside Jehovah's Witness life. It's not that bad, you know. And you can love money, you can love your job, you can get educated, you can go back to school. Doesn't matter what you're doing. Just get involved. All right, so this podcast is going to be a bit pitsy because I recorded it in two parts. So I might double up on my speech. It does happen. Hey, thanks for listening so far, and hopefully part two is about to merge. Well, I've actually added part three because I listened to the first part and the second part, decided to play the second recording first, and then half of the first part second. But then I thought, well, I kind of need a bit of an introduction because I just wanted to sort of clarify a few things. One of the things I have noticed, that I'm not trying to publicly shame anyone by using their names, but ironically, most of the people I've talked about either did or probably would never listen to this podcast. So I wanted to tell you about a personal experience because a lot of the stuff I'm saying is actually quite personal. And I personally had to be in the right frame of mind when recording this. And I've kind of been overanalyzing things probably a little bit too much, but I basically wanted to have the right frame of mind when recording this. So I want to give you a little bit of background about five people that I grew up with, and I'm going to say their names. One of them lives in Australia, and that's Tony Martin. And Tony Martin was one of the members of the Rat Pack, and he was Ray Martin's son. And he eventually gave up working for his father because one of the reasons was he felt that Ray Martin treated myself better than his own son. And we had Kerry Martin, who worked in the family business, and Tony Martin and Danny DeHett, which was me. And we used to be a big part of actually the runnings of a painting and decorating company that employed mainly Jehovah's Witnesses, but some worldly people, as we called them. I had a lot of responsibility in that company. I worked there for 7 years, but after I finished my apprenticeship, I was a fully qualified tradesman. So I actually got a lot of responsibility that at a young age. So anyway, so part of the Rat Pack was Tony Martin. That's who he is. Grant Smith was also in the Rat Pack, as we got labelled by the congregation elders, because we're always in trouble. And Grant Smith had a brother called Kyle Smith. And Kyle Smith was sort of like the fifth and a half member of the Rat Pack, because he was a couple of years younger than Grant. Now, Kyle got a real hard time because he was really feminine, and he used to wear... he was obviously gay, but he couldn't really come out because basically it wasn't acceptable that they'd be gay and be in Jehovah's Witness organization. So he was kind of always hiding it. Eventually he left the Jehovah's Witness organization and got himself a boyfriend, which is all cool. And the funny things about, well, not the funny things about that is Kyle would have actually had such a hard life. And I remember one day after being out of the J-Dub thing for about 10, 15 years, I'm walking down the road and I bumped into Kyle, and he had just said to me he'd just left the police station because he jumped on a train in Picton and got done for riding on the back of a train all the way to Christchurch and got done when he was getting off the train. And I hadn't seen Kyle for 10 or 15 years, and I said to him, "How long have you been doing heroin?" And he looked at me and he said, "How did you know that?" And I said, "I can just tell by your eyes, mate." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, well, I'm on the methadone program now." And I said, "Oh, my sister was a heroin user." And I sort of, once you've had a lot to do with them, you can sort of tell. So my belief is Kyle found life very hard. And it was about a year ago that he actually was swimming at Graham Condon Pool. And he had a brain clot and died while swimming. Now, Kyle, when I met him at Grant's funeral, which is the last part of this podcast, he was actually actively trying to come back into the Jehovah's Witness faith. And he was still gay, but he obviously wasn't practicing, wasn't falling short, and he was studying to be a Jehovah's Witness because he obviously felt like he was falling short and was trying to strive up to the standards that was allowed, you know, to be a Jehovah's Witness. Unfortunately, he died natural causes, but he had one hell of a life in between that. So obviously there's Tony Martin, Grant Smith, Jeremy Coulter. I'll go through the whole lot. And then we had another guy called Paul Dawkes. Jeremy Coulter had a father who was an elder. Grant Smith had a father who was an elder. And then Tony Martin, his father was a ministerial servant, but never quite made it to elder status, which are prominent people in the church. And here I am as a one-parent family. I'm in the Rat Pack, and I'm kind of the leader of them. I'm the head rascal. And we went through those that age period where we all got our driver's license. We all wanted to have zooped-up cars, and we all wanted to hoon around town and do all that sort of stuff. So we crashed our cars multiple times. We were always sort of in trouble. But the good thing about it, we had a real good sort of like brotherhood, and we were the popular guys in the faith, as they call it. So I could actually ring up a few of my friends, and you try this yourself, and say, "Hey, we're doing a video at my place. Would you like to come around?" And we could get 30 people together, all crammed into a lounge, and we'd watch a video at the time. So we're all quite close. And that, I think that's the real draw card of a Jehovah's Witness group. There is the worldly people which are outside the organisation, and then obviously they have their own community or village, so to speak. So. That's why you can sort of get along quite happily within the organisation and not really have to go outside. So yeah, and Paul Dawkes, well, I haven't been able to find Paul Dawkes. He renamed himself to Paul Hollins because the name Dawkes used to give him a lot of grief. So I don't know. I don't hear from Jeremy Coulter, but every time I turn up somewhere and Jeremy's there, he's always talking to me like I'm just a normal person, which is nice. But what I'm trying to say is we've got five guys who used to go every second weekend. We used to go away somewhere on our cars. We spend a lot of time learning how to handle alcohol. Often we'd be chasing the same girl because we all like girls, but we were all virgins and we were all guys that were trying to find somebody who was who would marry us so we could start our life, which was sort of the normal in the Jehovah's Witness faith. So when Tony was the first person to get married and when he got engaged, he came to me and asked if I would be his best man. And unfortunately, Sarah, his fiance, and I didn't get on very well, so I declined at being his best man. And he finished asking Grant to be his best man. And he was. And then when Grant got engaged and found the love of his life, he asked me to be his best man once again, which was really, really nice. However, because Belinda, his girlfriend, didn't... at the time we felt was in good standing, which was my personal belief and all the things I sort of believe in. So I said, no, I didn't feel right about putting myself in that position. So then Tony ended up being his best man at his wedding. So we all grew up together. We spent a lot of time together. We all got in trouble with the elders and we were called the Rat Pack. So it was quite a good wee thing to have within the organisation that was very restrictive. But we all had a pretty fantastic time. And, you know, and all due respect to all the people who think they're doing things right, they don't know any better. And I'm sure they're living a great life. But the next part of this podcast is really just explaining something that happened to me and how I felt about it. And that will be, and I would actually like to talk about some of the other different aspects at a later stage. So if you do have any comments, by all means, add them in this podcast. And I'm quite willing to talk about them. And by all means, as I say at the very end of this podcast, do share your experiences. Don't keep them to yourself. There's no real point. I hope you enjoy the second or the third part of this podcast. Thanks for listening. Anyway, I don't really know what I'm waffling on about. I just wanted to talk about my time being a Jehovah's Witness and how I had to sort of start fresh. I had to start my life over. I went to one of my friends was delivering pamphlets and a truck driver was coming down the road and the truck driver had been given his license back, but it must have had blackouts and he blacked out. And the truck went over the other side of the road. My mate, who was pretty athletic, saw the truck, tried to jump over his bonnet of his car, and got hit by the truck and killed. His wife and his daughter was in the car, and they watched this all happen right in front of them. And Grant Smith was his name, and he asked me to be his best man at his wedding, so we were quite close. And I went to, we don't have funerals, but I went to the ceremony thing and it was at the Elms Hotel. And I walked in there and there was about 200 people there who recognised me and they were coming up to me saying, oh, it's nice that you could come along, Danny. And then I got my old boss, Ray Martin Limited, Ray Martin, and he came up to me and he said, you shouldn't be here. And I said, because people don't know that you're disfellowshipped and they're coming up and talking to you. And I said, well, put a sign around my neck and tell people if you want. And I had my girlfriend with me at the time. And people were coming up and rubbing their hands over my shoulders to say g'day, but they weren't talking to me. Another really good mate, which was Ray Martin's son, Tony Martin, he was whispering in my ear, come back to the church, come back to the church, you know. And other people were just talking to me like it was no big deal. So there's all these contradictions. Anyway, the Ray Martin guy finished up. He kept on saying to me, I shouldn't be here and I'm a disgrace and really got stuck into me, you see. So I leaned over and I said to him, I said, you've lost the plot, Ray. You're cracked in the head. Get out of my face. So then I thought, oh, I've had enough of this. I've paid my respects to Grant and I'll leave. So as I'm leaving, Grant Smith's mother caught my eye, and she came up to me and she said, "Thank you so much for coming. I know how hard it would have been for you to been here today." And she said, "And Grant would be really pleased that you come to pay your respects." And I gave her a big hug. And then I left, and I remember standing outside the hotel and just weeping like a baby. And it just, everything hit me about the religion and how stupid it is that you couldn't even go and pay your respects to somebody. The fact that somebody talked to you who shouldn't be talking to you was a problem. And at the end of the day, it's just a man-made organization controlled by Charles T. Rutherford, who came up with a really good formula for a religion, and people believe it to the point where they are willing to let themselves grow old and die without talking to other family members. Imagine if they have it wrong, you know, and all in the name of God, you know, and everyone's, it's just so horribly, you know. But you know, today it's weird. My sister committed suicide, probably because she felt that her life wasn't up to speed. My stepfather, who was the life of party, a bit of a laugh of a guy, committed suicide because no one could understand mental illness. My half-brother doesn't talk to me. Get this. My half-brother lives about 10 doors down from his daughter, who has been kicked out of the religion, and he doesn't talk to her. And the other day, this mystery gift, his favourite cheese platter and some crackers, turned up on her doorstep. He can't even talk to his own daughter. His sons, which weren't baptised into the religion, still associate with him. He can talk to them fine, but because his daughter had been baptised inside the religion and she's been kicked out of it, he can't talk to her. Now, he thinks he's doing the right thing by not talking to her, not communicating with her. And my mother was really close to that granddaughter, and she's not talking to her now. It sounds ridiculous, and it's such a funny thing to explain to people. And my reason for doing this podcast and this video that didn't work was I just wanted people to know who might be tempted to listen to this. If you used to be a Jehovah's Witness, stop keeping all those feelings that you've got about it to yourself. Start talking to other people. And if you were one of the unfortunate ones which were molested by one of the elders or somebody who you used to trust and confide with, go tell other people. The legal system in our country does not allow that to happen. Stop keeping secrets and start sharing your life with other people. There's lots of support out there. I'm not a bad fella. I've got a good life. I have morals. I've never really done anything illegal. I've sped. I've lost my license once for speeding with my V8, but that was a different story. But yeah, it's my message really. I mean, living life as Jehovah's Witness, oh my God, get out of it. Start building a life of your own. I used to live in 5-year implements, and I still kind of do really, because I felt like life is only 5 years long. Now I'm worried about my retirement. Now I'm looking at building up a financial nest egg so I can retire. I travel extensively. I love traveling. I've been to well over 30 countries. Christmas time, I went to China. I went to Bangladesh. I was the only tourist there. And then I went to India. And I look at life differently. I look at the opportunities that we have. I mean, if you're a business person and you're looking to get an idea off the ground, don't hesitate. You know, don't wait around. Don't think it's too late. I started over at the age of 23 with nothing. When I got to 40 and I went through a divorce, I managed to keep my business, but financially I had $5 to my name and started over. I don't think I'm the king of starting over. But, you know, build relationships up with people who truly care about you. I used to think that I would never be able to form trusting relationships outside the Jehovah's Witness faith. I used to have those men that I talked about who I used to look up like fathers. And I never worried about not having a father because I had five fathers who could give me some really good advice. And Jehovah's Witnesses, don't worry about them. They're quite happy. They've got their networks. They've got their relationships. It's just unfortunate that they discommunicate their family members. But there's other people out there you can adopt as family. Look me up on Facebook. Look me up on LinkedIn. Go to dehek.com or danny.co.nz. Find my social media. Add me as a friend. If you're in Christchurch or you're around the world, let's help each other out. That's my message. It's not all bad, but I certainly do not miss the days of having to wake up on a Saturday morning and knock on people's doors who didn't want you there and try to preach the Word of God. I don't miss going to a two-hour meeting from 7 to 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night. I don't miss doing the home Bible study group on a Thursday at 7 to 8. I don't miss going to church or to the Kingdom Hall on Sundays at 10 to 12. I don't miss having to find work that wasn't too well paid or most Jehovah's Witnesses are either carpet cleaners, window cleaners, painters and decorators, builders, roofers, plumbers. They're all tradespeople because they want to have jobs where they don't spend years getting an education, which, you know, so I don't miss having a qualification, or I don't miss having a love for a business, or I don't miss not loving money. You can have money in your life. Money's good. Money's the other God you can worship if you want once you're out of the jade up thing. Anyway, I hope my rambles helped you or it's given you something to think about. Please post a comment. But that's Daddy as the Jehovah's Witness. Have a good day.